Incoming message.
This is a Slog Audio Caching podcast, produced by Paul Connor Packy of St. Louis, Missouri. November the 12th, 2006. Episode number 44. Interview with Slogger President, Steve Brumley, a.k.a. Java Programmer.
Hello everyone, this is Paul Kamapaki. I'm a member of SLAGA, the St. Louis Area Geocachers Association. In these podcasts, I interview geocachers, land managers, and others involved in geocaching, as well as gather audio at geocaching events. Subscribe to this podcast on iTunes or go to podcast.geostl.com for other options to download episodes. During the podcast, if you hear this sound, it means I am about to explain what you are going to hear next. If you hear this sound, it means there has been a break in the conversation or a change in physical location. These podcasts are published under the Creative Commons Non-Commercial No Derivative License. To contact me, send an email to podcast@geostl.com. Well, this is Paul Kanapaki, and it's been a long time since I've sat in my living room interviewing somebody, but I'm here with SLAGA President Steve Brumley, a.k.a. Java Programmer. That's J-A-V-A-P-G-M-R. Steve was recently elected president at one of our SLAGA picnics, and hopefully we'll get him to tell us what grand plans he has for SLAGA.
I was born a long, long time ago, 1951. I'm not afraid of my age. I deserve every year of it. I grew up in a little town called Beckomar, which is about 3 miles west of Carlisle Lake. With a normal family, I've got 3 siblings. I have a sister who's 18 years younger than I am, so same set of parents. It just is one of those surprises. So I have a, and if you ever see Quick Slam 911, that's my sister. She's a police officer out in Carlisle, Illinois, and still lives out there. My brother and sister also live out in that vicinity, so I'm the only one that escaped Clinton County, if you will. Kind of give you a little bit of a background. I've got a wife, 2 kids, 2 boys. My oldest one is freshman this year in Rolla, in an engineering program. My second one, who actually caches with me sometimes, his name is Speedy Eagle. He's in 8th grade. He does enjoy caching, though he's so busy with his other activities, such as running, with thus the name Speedy Eagle. We really don't get a chance to cache much right now.
It's cross country?
He's a sprinter. He's went to state last year and is a 7th grader, and they expect him to totally do it again this year. He's just very, very fast on short distances, amazingly so, and which does real well for the indoor soccer, which it consumes our life for about the six winter months. I've got a wife who's, I'm just slowly but surely getting into geocaching. She sees a little bit of benefit in the fact that it keeps me from sitting in front of the computer all the time, but she's still not into it to go out and suggest that we do it. I'm the one that has to kind of still drag her along a little bit. She will go along with me, provided it's not too icky, if you will, spiders, you know, really deep woods and stuff. She won't do that. The Java programmer name, right now I'm a computer programmer. I have been since 1969, which gives you an idea. I've been doing it way too long. Programming in Java, and I kind of got the domain name a few years ago and use it for my identity, and seemed like it fit real well as a name for geocaching. That's kind of it. I've been doing this. I found my first cache May of 2005. I had 42 caches on January 1st, starting January 1st of this year, and I found 311 last Wednesday or last Thursday. So I kind of just got started into it and did a rapid start. 69, I started off at going to school and control data down on the campus of St. Louis University, learned assembly, Fortran, COBOL, RPG. I spent the first about 20 years of my career doing RPG, which is kind of more of an IBM language, if anything, and then moved over to Java when it became available in late 90s, and have been doing it ever since.
Do you care to mention where you work?
Sure. I work for Enterprise Rent-A-Car. I have been there for a little over 12 years. I drive from Columbia, Illinois, where I live, out to Weldon Spring every day, which is about 35 miles plus or minus a little bit.
Wow.
But I start at 6:30 in the morning, so it's not bad.
What do you do during the commute?
Radio. I will listen to contemporary Christian music. I listen to News Talk 1120. And the last 3 months since gas got up to about $3 a gallon, I've been commuting, carpooling with a couple other guys from South County. So we have sports conversations and other things like that, which is kind of a first time in the 12 years I've been with Enterprise that I've actually driven with anybody else. It's been a nice, refreshing change.
Back off a little bit from geocaching. What other hobbies do you have?
Photography and woodworking. Not so much as much as I used to. Film got to be a little bit expensive because I tend to be, when I shoot, I don't shoot 2 or 3 pictures. I shoot 25 or 30 or 40 or 50 or more. And developing got a little bit more expensive than I cared to do, so I kind of got away from it. But I've got probably $3,000 or $4,000 investment in film cameras, and I haven't switched them over to digital yet. The investment there now would, to get the equivalent, probably would be closer to $10,000. I have a digital camera. I've got a Sony, which I really like, but I don't have all the lenses and all the other things that go along with it that I would. Again, when I do anything, I tend to overdo it.
Are there other places you go throughout the day?
Normally during the day, I'll be at Welland Spring. But with my timing, my hours the way they are, I'm usually home and done by 4 o'clock in the evening. So I have time, especially during the summer when it doesn't get dark until 8:30 or so, I have plenty of time to cache in the evening, which I enjoy doing if I can get someplace where I don't have to do any of these long walks to find things.
Do you get out during lunchtime now? Are you close enough to any caches that you can?
No, actually, anything that's been reasonably close, I've already gotten. I put a couple out myself, at least one over that area now, and I've got a couple other ideas I want to, but most everything that's within short driving distance I've already gotten.
Recently put out some caches of your own.
I helped put some out on Grant's Trail, which kind of got me started, and I've got one now in Columbia. I've got two more that should be out today or tomorrow, depending on when I get everything typed in. The biggest thing is trying to find somebody that would give us permission, and that was been the hardest thing, is finding anybody who would take the would give permission to do it. And the guy that actually did it, Youngblood 85, actually knew somebody who he had lived in town all of his life. I've only been there 20 years, so I'm still a newbie. Finally, he knew somebody to talk to that managed to get us to the right person. We got permission to place him in the park, so we just started doing that. And hopefully, before we're done, we'll have 7 or 8 in town. Salt City Park. Well, actually, one of our best things was O'Fallon, Illinois. The economic coordinator for Columbia, who finally granted permission, had talked to O'Fallon and the work of Baja Clan ahead of us over there. They said they had such a positive experience with it that he gave a very glowing review, and that was kind of the final thing that had to go through. So if it hadn't been for Amanda and her group getting that put together and setting the foundation elsewhere in Southern Illinois, it made it good for the rest of us. And I know that the Corps of Engineers is very positive because my sister has several around Carlisle Lake, and they're looking for her to do more. And there's been, I think, probably in the last year, 4 or 5 in the Corps of Engineers. But DNR is a little funky in Illinois. Some things work real well and some things don't. So, again, it's just kind of each area, much like Missouri, each area has its own quirks, and you just have to kind of work within those.
Did you get your sister into geocaching?
Actually, I kind of explained it to her. She found her caches. She started finding caches before I did. I tend to go at things a little weird. I've read about geocaching. My boss actually exposed me to it. Some of the friends he camped with showed him, and he kind of told me about it. And then I said, that sounds like a neat idea. And I'd gotten a GPS for Christmas in the end of 2004. Read about it, got my account on GC.com, did everything, but I didn't even go out looking for caches until about the end of May in 2005. And first one I actually found was Falling Spring one over, which is about 3 or 4 miles north of town I live in. And I go, this is neat. I enjoy this. And I found some of the ones around the area, then started getting JV Park and some of those. And once I got to the group hunt in January of this year and got to meet some of the people, I kind of really got hooked. And as much on the people, if you will, as on the sport itself.
And the events.
And the events. Those are all important.
As of this printing, a total of 311 cache finds and 12 traditional cache hides. It's also a big list of geocoins. Are you into the geocoin collecting?
As much as I can afford. And I think most of the people who collect them realize that you can sink an awful lot of money into them. In the beginning, I would think I was collecting about anything. Now I'm a lot more selective. If it's something I really like, I'll pick it up. But I won't just pick one up for the sake of it being a geo coin anymore. You could sink an awful lot of money if you figure at least a minimum of $7 a piece for those. There's still a bunch in there.
That's why I don't do it. One of those, if you're going to do it, you might as well do it full force,
sure.
And then you're going to sink a lot of money into it. You mentioned something about a Grants Trail. What can you explain what it was you were involved in as far as putting out cash?
Well, there were a bunch of us talking at lunch one day going, there's really nothing along Grants Trail. Kind of talking about it being an idea to try to do some, and we just all said, okay, then you hide some, and I'll stay out of your way and I'll hide some, and we pretty much all just went out and picked an area and then put some caches out and kind of find out that we weren't stepping on each other's toes of where we were, and then once we managed to get to that point where we had things spread out. But I think there was maybe 8 or 9 people involved overall in getting caches put out. So it made the area of the 8 miles, I think there's about 40 caches along that period on that trail. So it really makes it a nice chance for somebody to get out and enjoy the area and geocaching both at the same time.
Now, is Grants Trail an old railroad?
It's a spur off of an old railroad. It's a Carondelet spur. I'm not sure exactly what railroad it's off of now, but it was bought in 1992 from the Rails to Trails, from the trails.net, and they basically turned it over to St. Louis County Parks a few years ago to be a trail. And right now it's a gorgeous. I don't know if you've been on it or not, but it's really
not lately. In the early days I was.
It's really a neat. They've improved it a lot. They've you know, it's all now asphalted. It's really a nice, and they've cleaned up along the sidelines, so it really makes a nice long bike or walk. The way that it happened last, when I know they had a tour of the Grant that DigiGuy put together, they actually started in the middle and did the 4 mile cycle one way, and then they came back and did the 4 mile cycle the other. You can pick it up in chunks. I didn't have the opportunity to take a bike ride that day, but I've gotten about half of it now, and just doing a little, maybe 2 mile sections, or mile and a half, 2 mile, whatever I feel like walking, because knowing I have to walk there and walk back. So I'll get half of them on the way there and get the other half on the way back, so it doesn't seem quite so long. My bike is not in real good shape. My kids have used it, so it's, you know, I've got to get another one to get it back at this thing.
Maybe dinged up.
Maybe, yeah, just a little.
At what point did you join Slog or find out about that there was an organization called Slog?
Boy, that's a good question. I think I found Slog on my own. I know my boss didn't tell me about Slog. He told me about geocaching. I think somewhere along the line I did a search on the internet and ended up finding Slaga and finding the news group. And I think, again, through the news group, you get a very good feel of the people that are there. I felt like I knew most of them before I ever, ever laid eyes on them.
So did you lurk for a while?
I lurked for at least 6 months, probably maybe a little bit more than that. I've worked with volunteer organizations for most of my life. What goes on with Slaga goes on with every group. You've got individuals, and I equate, you know, working with volunteers like herding cats. As long as you entice them with something that they can all aim toward, they're all follow that direction, but they're easily distracted off to something else. Because really, no, there's, other than internal motivation, there's no motivation for volunteers other than the fact that they want to do something.
Bring food into the picture. We're all going to gather around that table.
and I think from my letter I said that we're a group that eats and sometimes caches. I don't know about everyone else, but I really, a lot of times caching is my quiet time, and I really don't want to do it with a group. I want to go out in the woods and kind of just go out and do that by myself. I enjoy the fellowship, but when I want to cache, I really want to cache, and I don't want maybe one other person, but for the most part, I just soon do it by myself, because you get a bunch of people there, it's really not caching, because everybody's playing follow the leader. Somebody's first, and everybody else is kind of following them. Enjoy the fellowship. I can't say that, not to discount that a lot, but caching, I think, is a lot more of an individual sport. I know there's a lot of groups like Leroy and Gosh Hawk and a lot of those guys. They all seem to do it together, and I mean, and they have their teams or their groups of maybe one or two, and they go out and do that, and that's their thing, and that's their fellowship. And I wish I had somebody that I could count on a weekly basis that's always going to be available. But you know, I've just been able to always find some. If I want to go out with other people, I would be able to find somebody who's willing to go. But for me, a lot of it, I just assume do it by myself. I look forward to being able to do this when I have a lot more time to do it. Right now, I've spent probably every vacation day that I've taken over the last year anyway, I've always been some form of geocaching center somewhere. Even if it's not the primary motive, I know that at least I'll go out and look for a cache or two wherever I'm at, which before I never did. Now, a lot of the times, if there's going to be a group hunt or whatever, I'll take a day of vacation to go do that just because I enjoy doing that as much as anything, like we did with the Packwood a couple weeks ago. You know, we went out, and that was my thing, is I'd hated to see them go because everybody had said how beautiful that area was, and I didn't want to miss out on it. So I said, okay, we'll go pull them in and see anybody who can come along, and I took a day of vacation, and we all went out and found them, which was really great.
Next time you go on a family vacation, do you think there will be geocaching involved, or will you have to put that aside enough for the sake of your family?
I may put it to the back burner, but I won't. I always take my GPS with me, and I always have whatever's in the area that I'm going. I may not have a chance to go maybe do one, more than one or two, but
you'll know it's there.
I'll know it's there in case I do. And I already talked to my wife about it. We go to my in-laws in Georgia every year for Thanksgiving, and I told her, I said, my intention is to at least pick up one in Kentucky and one in Tennessee on the way down or the way back, so I can put those two on my states of where I found one. And from what they tell me, if I go through Nashville, I could probably get a lot of them if I wanted to stop by the lamppost. But I'm not sure I want to do that.
Yeah, according to your list, you have Illinois, Missouri, Georgia, and California. Was that an actual physical cache
in
California?
Yes, actually, I found about 10 out in California, 9 or 10 out in California. I was out in a conference in June of this year, and I went out a day early because of just the way the airlines flew, and I just took the day and walked through San Francisco and found 10 out there, which kind of neat to be able to do that.
Give you a chance to see a little bit of the city, too?
Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have done it the same way. I walked probably 12 miles, walking through a big loop down all the way through Fisherman's Wharf. I walked straight out to the bay and then walked up about probably 7 or 8 miles. Overall, it was probably about 7 or 8 miles one way of the walk, and then about 2 or 3 back. So it was really a neat way, and I would not have done that had I not been geocaching. I would have either taken a trolley or a bus and missed a whole lot of the area. And
was there a cache in Fisherman's Wharf?
There actually is several caches at Fisherman's Wharf. There's one that I didn't get that requires you going into an arcade that, you know, and I'm not going to go in there because they were kind of wanting you to pay to go in the arcade, but I won't do that. I'm not sure how that was ever approved, but there were actual ones that were actually landmarks and physical pieces that you could actually. There's a lot more virtuals out there than there were otherwise, but you know, but there were actual physical caches that you could sign your name to out there. I'm not really fond of puzzle caches particularly. That's probably because I don't know how to figure them out. Memorable finds, the one that was probably the anything that Rich does, RGS, is probably the more aggravating, and everyone is a physical satisfaction when you find them because they're never easy and they always make you think. So the ammo box in the woods, or just another ammo box in the woods, both of those were ones that once you find, you know, they were frustrating when I was doing it, but once you find them, they make you feel good that you did. There's just so many parks and things I never would have been in other than for geocaching, that places I didn't know existed, places I would never have bothered to go to other than for geocaching, and it's really, that's the one thing about this that you don't take, that I didn't realize is how many places are out there that are just pretty places to go visit that I never would have gone otherwise.
How about long hikes? 2-3 milers, any of those?
Some of the ones, the Lost Cabin up in Pierre Marquette, that was a long walk and a long hill down and a long way to get there. I enjoyed finding it, but it was one of those ones where I'm going, man, you know, I'm an old fat guy. You know, I don't, that's one of the reasons I'm doing this also, is it's good exercise to get out and walk where I wouldn't go out for any other reason.
What made you want to go out for the position of president and, I have a bunch of follow-up questions to that.
Well, why did I want to be president? I guess I've always been involved. I don't mind volunteering. I've got energy. I've got this willingness to help. And I got to believe that you got to pay, that you got to give back to what you do. I mean, I enjoy caching, but you can't let it. It's got to have some kind of positive energy to it. The thing I guess that always amazes me is how many people have cached for maybe 2 weeks or a month and they disappear and you never see them again. And then you see people that have cached. They found 3,000 caches or 5,000 caches. And how do you manage to do that? Because now there's a lot of caches there, but to get to that point, even in St. Louis, there's an awful lot of dedication. I just felt like I needed to give back to the sport. I mean, you can't just take. You have to be able to give back. And this is, you know, and being able to, ability to organize and ability to take responsibility and come up with some ideas and do things. You know, it's something that I've done, like I said, in a lot of different organizations. I just felt like I could do it here, and I wasn't afraid to try.
Since you were elected, what have you in the officers done? Have you met and discussed new things?
Sure, we've met twice now. We met at the beginning of October, right after we took office, and then the beginning of November. We're going to try to meet at least maybe 6 or 8 times a year. I'm not going to promise we'll meet every month, depending on anything that needs to be done. There's several things that I've heard as being things that people had mentioned. One was education. One was, you know, some kind of store that you could buy Sloggo emblazoned material, coats, shirts, and things, and logoed items. And the third thing was to some kind of a giveaway that we could have that had our name on it that wouldn't get thrown away immediately. I mean, the brochures are wonderful, but you look at them for 30 seconds and they either go in your pocket or go in trash. There's not something that you'll keep. Where we wanted to come up with something that we could give out to new potential members and people that are, you know, that are interested in geocaching, that would kind of point to where Sloga is and something that they would keep and wouldn't throw away. We've got a set of carabiners that we're hoping to give to people that take the geocaching 101 class and that come up to places like Tiger Days, the adults. And actually, again, these are for adults. Tiger Days are at Beaumont for the scouting events, or anywhere that we can get out in public where we can get our name in front of people. Because I guess my thing is to expand a sport does a lot of things. The more popular it is, the more people calling for caches in areas where they're not there. Hopefully, the more public pressure it is to allow us into the areas where we're not at. The other thing is the more people that are caching, the more caches that'll be hidden. That's going to be good for everybody. So, and the more people that are aware of it, the less smuggle problems we'll have with people not knowing what it is. And so it's just more education, and the more it's known, the better we're going to be all the way around, I think, as long as it's known for the positive and the right reasons and not for the wrong ones. The idea with the education is teach people how to cache responsibly, how to hide caches that are worth finding, and to, you know, and to basically make it easier so people don't get so frustrated and get burnt out and quit so quickly. The one thing that I thought when I took this job, you know, took this job on was, what could I possibly offer to people that have found, you know, I found at that time 250 caches, people that have found 2,500 or 5,000, what can I offer them? One of the things I think is I've grown up with technology. I've used technology a better part of my life, and maybe I can help them work smarter or cache smarter. What I found was amazing is RGS had told me that he knew of a couple cachers that had quite a few caches that had really, really never used pocket queries, didn't know how to use them, what they were good for, didn't really use GSAC. And I thought, you know, that's one thing maybe we need to put together. And what we intend on doing is our first class for next year is getting the most out of GC.com, talking about pocket queries, talking about how to use some of the things like GSAC or GeoBuddy, which is a new one, or Expert GPS, kind of idea what they are, what can do for you, how you can use those to make your caching easier, how you can organize your finds, how you can organize the areas that you're going caching in, how can you load the waypoints into your GPS without having to physically key each one in manually, which I was amazed how many people that are still doing that. I mean, some units you have to, but if you don't, life is so much simpler if you don't. One of the classes I want to put together is how to solve puzzle caches. And I'm not going to teach that one. I'm going to sit back and take notes. So I don't mind giving, but I also want to take back on it a little bit.
Okay. Well, you mentioned printing out cache pages. Are you paperless?
I come and go. There are caches that I actually will print the pages out for, but for the most part, I try to do it without it. It gets way too wasteful of paper.
So you have a PDA?
I have a PDA in my pocket, actually. So I've got everything within 5 miles of the Eureka zip code, so in case I actually have a few minutes on the way back. So I have everything on the way back that I have a chance to.
But I think you've already done Split Down the Middle Part 2.
I have done that.
Because you did that on the way back from the geocaching.
That one and the Taylor 2 Parks, which I think I've looked for that one 4 times before I finally found it.
You did, okay. You did find it.
I did finally find that one.
If not, I would drive you over there and actually show you where it is, because it's.
I found it a couple times. It took me a while, and actually, I touched the bolt. I just didn't twist it the right way. So whatever I did, but it. I knew about what it was and about what I was looking for, but still trying to find it. It was not easy.
What is in your GPS receiver arsenal?
Well, Bernie's not going to like this answer, but I use Magellan. I've got a Magellan Radiant Platinum, which I've had for. The first one I ever had. I picked up an Explorer 600 this year, and I've been quite happy with both of them. I had the investment in the Magellan mapping software, the Topo 3D, to go to a Garmin. It would cost me a lot of money. If I ever have a lot of money laying around free without a place to be, I might consider the CSX or whatever the equivalent is. But right now, I really don't need to.
And have you used a Garmin before? Has anybody lent it to you so you can compare?
I have had a Legend. In fact, that's what my son uses. I picked up a Legend reasonably inexpensively this summer just to play with it a little bit. It was okay, but it was, again, once you use it's like Ford or Chevy. It does the same thing, but does it a little bit differently. And I found myself playing with the unit more than using it as a tool. So I'm going, I gave it to my son, which is, gave him something to use. And again, I'll stick with my Magellans until I can afford, to invest in something that in the whole package maybe at that point. I know that the Magellans take a little bit longer to home in. There's things about the Garmins I actually like better. I'll end up walking past a waypoint and having to come back to it where the Magellans won't. But I seem like I get a lot better. And even I don't have the CSX equivalent. I keep a signal. I seem like I keep a signal better than the Legends and the C60CX is even. Everything except the new ones, I seem like I do pretty well. My unit was about maybe about two-thirds of the cost of a new CSX. So, until I see something else, I'll stay with it. The Magellans are a little quirky, but once you get past the quirks on them, they seem to work pretty well. I'm not one of the old-timers. I know from at least the stories, there's a lot more caches now. There's a lot more people who at least try caching. I don't necessarily think they stay. I think there seems to be an awful big burnout rate on people. They may try 5 or 10, and then they don't do any more. They may try 25. You see a log. This is one of the funnest things I've ever done, and they haven't logged anything, after that or 2-3 weeks. Or you see the cases where you see a log. I can't find. This is the third one I can't find in a row. What am I doing wrong? People never come back, and you go, that shouldn't be that hard. This is fun. It should be fun. And when it starts being frustrating, then maybe we're not doing our job. The thing that I've seen now is more than anything is, I think we're maybe getting the word across to more areas. There's more people that are willing to at least consider strange people coming into your town, wandering around with handheld devices, looking suspicious, that you may not have seen. I know probably 2 years ago, Columbia wouldn't have been open to geocaching. I think Dre from DreCat actually approached them several years ago, and they weren't interested at that point. Where we're able to get in there now. But a lot of the good reputations from the geocachers from other areas has bode well for Columbia allowing us to put caches there. All of us have the responsibility to be responsible cachers, and that's one of the things that I don't think is pushed enough on the geocaching site or anywhere else is not being responsible. If you turn the rock over, put the rock back where you found it, a lot of that doesn't happen, and I think that's where geocaching gets a bad name, or we don't ask permission, or we put things where we know we shouldn't, or where we really need to step and think about, you really ought not to put it there. The one thing that doesn't ever go over well is policing ourselves. I mean, if you see a cache is in the wrong spot, say something privately to the person, the cache. Don't put it on a news group and get everybody else involved.
Don't take it upon yourself.
Or take it upon yourself to remove it. If you didn't put it there, unless it's violation of, something, don't take it away. Just because everybody plays this game a little bit differently, you can't impose your rules on someone else. What you have to do, though, unless it's something completely it's safe. I mean, I found a pair of scissors in a cache a while back. I picked them up, took them with me, because that's one of the things they say is no sharp objects, no weapons are sharp, and that could be considered a sharp object. I mean, whoever put it there, I'm sure wasn't trying to break the rules on purpose. They just weren't thinking. And you do things like that. I left a note for the person, hey, I took this because, and they said, and they gave back fine. Geocaching is one of those things that either it sounds like fun or it doesn't, but until you try it, you really won't know. For an investment of about $100, you can get a GPS, which you can use for a lot of other things. If you find you enjoy walking out in the woods, but if you're like I am, who is goal-oriented, you need to have a reason. Even if it is nothing more than a little plus one someplace in an electronic bit bucket. And as for Slaga, If you ever met a bunch of people that accept you just the way that you are, and to have fun, like to eat, and eat is like the key word, is they eat, and there's a fellowship and a camaraderie that I haven't experienced anywhere else, and I've been with a lot of organizations. Everybody's got a quirk, and we accept that as long as you understand that everybody's a little quirky. Someplace along the line, we're a lot of fun to be around. You think I'm quirky, you had to get a chance to know me, you'll know. And I think those of the Slager group knows I am a little quirky. But
you're the good Steve, not the evil Steve.
No, the good Steve, not the evil Steve. I enjoy this. I enjoy the people. It's been a lot of fun. I've enjoyed the fellowship and the meeting of the people. And I have not met a cashier yet that I haven't liked. They've always been, you know, we have something in common immediately. First person I ever met cashing was Gerhardus, and he was just coming out of one of the JB caches that I was walking in. I had never met another cashier before. That's long before I knew what's about Slaga or ever attended anything of Slaga. And once I attended the group hunt in January, I felt like I was part of the group to first cache. And it's kind of been, I won't say downhill, but it's been a different direction. But it's been a different direction since then. It's been a lot of fun. I've really appreciated it.
Well, thanks for being here, Steve. Are there any other final words you'd like to say?
Other than the fact that I'm always here, I'm always open. If you've got any suggestions, anything that you'd like to talk about, any concerns that you have with Slager, hopefully if there's something that you don't like or something you'd like to see, just let me know and we'll see what we can do. And look forward to at least seven or eight classes next year of education that we're going to get varying different things. And in January, our first one is going to be getting the most out of GC.com and how to actually use Pocket Queries and how to use GSAC and some of those neat little tools to make your life simple.
How do I sign up for that class? Do I have to be a paying member?
Actually, you have to be a contributing member. That's the one thing that, since we're having to pay for the meeting places this year, we're opening them to contributing members, or non-contributing members for the price of a membership of $10. And once you pay the $10, you're good for all the other classes. So it's going to cost you $10 for the first class, and that's just to get to be a contributing member at that point. Everything else will be free that we offer throughout the year. And if you've got suggestions for classes or things you'd like to see, we'll see what we can do to put it on our list.
Well, thanks for volunteering your time to be here as well as to help guide the group into bigger and better things.
All right, thank you.
This concludes the Slaga Podcast. For more information about the Slaga Group and geocaching in the St. Louis, Missouri area, go to www.geostl.com. Here's wishing you a strong signal and a trusty bearing.